This episode of the AC Podcast is brought to you by MinSim, the best way to get cheap 4G LTE data in the U.S. If you're looking for awesome service at a low cost, sign up for 3 months right now and get three for free. That's 3 months for free when you sign up for 3 months of service. And you always get free shipping with offer code ACFREESHIP at checkout. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast for Friday, December 22nd, 2017. We are so close to Christmas.
We're right on top of it.
Feliz Navidad.
We're sitting on top of Christmas. It's like the turtle that everything rests on in those fantasy books by Jerry. Help me out here. Nope, nothing.
Oh, man. See, I wasn't prepared.
Me too.
It's Christmas all the way
improv
down.
Improv at its finest. Jerry Hildenbrand, we have missed you Welcome back to the podcast.
You should have missed me because I'm awesome. Hi.
Yes, you are. It's good to have you back. Andrew, you've been here a while, but it's good to have you back too.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you're chopped liver. Mm-hmm. Why do people say you're chopped liver? Why does chopped liver have such a bad reputation?
Have you eaten that nasty crap?
I have. It's something that my family eats quite often, actually.
Mine too. That's why I hate it so much.
What?
Yeah, I think it's like a Eastern European thing.
Might be.
I don't know.
If that's all you can get, then hey.
Oh. No, it's it could be good. It can be good. It just depends on how it's made. But yeah, let's dump the chopped liver conversation and jump right into talking about tech. So today we're going to do things a little bit differently. We're going to talk a couple news items, a couple bits of follow-up, and then we're going to dive right into our best of 2017 roundup / discussion. Lots to talk about. We've been kind of leading up to this. It'll be a tight hour podcast, so let's not waste any more time. But first, we're going to talk about Andrew's follow-up to the Galaxy Note 8. You have been using it since it came out in September, and October. It got announced in September, came out in October. And it kind of left you a little bit, a little bit disappointed, I guess, after reviewing it. I think
polarized.
Well, yeah. I mean, after the Pixel 2 XL comes out and it kind of changes your perception of a lot of things, especially when it comes to Android software, how are you feeling about the Note 8 right now?
Well, the big thing for me was it snuck up on me that the thing is over 3 months old already. I think by the time that we ended up running the 3 month review, it had been 3.5 months, almost 4 months, which is, you know, since it had been announced, which thankfully we get to use these things, you know, right ahead of the announcement or right afterwards. So we've kind of get a few week head start on the rest of the people as well. Yeah, I think the big thing was that, as always happens, Samsung comes out with a new phone and it all seems really great. And then Google will come out and, you know, does its thing. And all of a sudden you just don't want to put up with Samsung software as much. I think that I can still praise Samsung for a lot of what they've done in terms of consistency in the software and made it all look and perform a lot better out of the box with a lot less, you know, just crap happening everywhere. But when you use it for months and months and months, you start to notice a lot of the same like quibbles you can have with it and the way that some things work and the way that mine seemingly inexplicably continue to slow down 2 to 3 months after you use them, just as I saw with the Galaxy S8 earlier in the year. And it's just like, a lot of the conclusions in this Note 8 was that I don't feel like you get your money's worth when it comes to you just have weird slowdowns and there's not a lot to show for it extra there. And when Samsung makes the Galaxy S8 that's $250 less and is most of the same experience, it's kind of like, man, is this thing really worth what is still like $940? That's the crazy thing to me.
Yeah, I guess I haven't seen that slowdown, so I'm coming at this from a different perspective. It's not so much the performance that I find that I take issue with. It's the fact that I just don't get the consistent camera photo quality that I do from the Pixel 2. And that's surprising to me, given just how great cameras, Samsung's cameras have been in previous years. But it's notable how much Google has leapfrogged Samsung in this area. And that bears out not just with my experience, but a number of comparisons that people have made over the past few months.
Yeah.
Software camera versus hardware camera.
Sorry?
Software camera versus hardware camera.
Right, but this is Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung has a great hardware package for their camera. Google has a good one now. I mean, who knows when they'll change again. They did change from last year, but they depend more on the software to make a great picture than they do the hardware itself. When Samsung's learning engine gets up to speed, or when they're able to more tap into what Google's using, their cameras will be just as good or better.
I think that the funny thing about that point is, you know, in particular, is Daniel and I were talking about, as we'll get to, you know, the best Android cameras of the year. And the thing with the Note 8 is that they put all this emphasis on adding the second camera and having the telephoto and the live focus portrait mode. And if you take that out of the equation, which many people do because it's just not all, you know, it's just not a game-changing addition to have that second camera there. You know, the main camera is very, it produces very similar images as the Galaxy S7. And that's kind of the issue. That's where you see the leapfrog by some of these other companies. And again, it feels like this is a camera that is on offer for $700 in the Galaxy S8. And again, if you take out that second camera, or the second lens, the telephoto, which isn't all that applicable to most situations, you're looking at that same camera experience on what is a $940 phone. And so you rate it lower in respect to its price. And obviously the Pixel 2 and 2 XL, you know, they're not exactly cheap either, but the Pixel 2 is a $650 phone. And so it's kind of that same situation in reverse, where it's a cheaper phone, but has the same camera as the $879 phone. And it's amazing.
That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is you can save $300 and buy the S8 instead of the Note 8, and no amount of money in the world will get you a telephoto lens.
Sure.
So, I mean, we all have different
needs. Or the bigger screen, right? Or the S Pen, right?
We all have different needs. I think the Note 8 was a good phone, and at a time when Samsung needed a phone that we would find boring, is what they delivered.
Yeah, it's a non-controversial phone.
That's exactly what they needed. Everything works. Everything works as we expect it to work. There are no huge problems. There were some screen issues on a few early units, but you see that with every phone. And that's it. No other big complaints, and that's exactly what Samsung needed. I think they nailed it.
Yeah, I think that's important. Once you go past, you know, me nitpicking about maybe the software or the cameras or something, most of it is solid, and the screen is absolutely amazing. I mean, the hardware is great as well. It still has things like a headphone jack and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and wireless charging is nice to have. It has all of those things, so there are no like core shortcomings. And I guess that's probably why we nitpick a little bit more about the software and the camera.
Yeah.
I just think that going back to the fundamentals between a hardware and a software camera, that's I continue to find that really interesting, because two comparisons have been released over the last couple of days that are relevant to this. The first was a very, very well done, comprehensive comparison by The Verge, where Sean O'Kane compares the Pixel 2, the Note 8, the iPhone 10, the HTC U11, and the LG V30. And the Note 8 was in the middle in every test. It was not the best in daylight. It was not the best in low light. The only thing it was really, really good at was video stabilization. And the second test was by an Engadget Engadget employee, and his name is escaping me right now. I'm so sorry. But what he did was he put four phones on a like a tripod or monopod, and he took it onto the New York subway, and he compared their stabilization systems. And the Note 8 has a stabilization system that is so much better than anything else, including the iPhone 10, which is also dual stabilized. It's the only phone other than the Note 8 that is dual stabilized, which means that both lenses are optically stabilized, but it didn't even come close. You can barely tell the Note 8 is shaking. So what's so interesting to me is that this basically just doubles down on the fact that Samsung has this basically eternal hardware advantage. It makes the nicest phones that with the best manufacturing processes. It gets access to the newest hardware much faster than any other company. But it still cannot
compete inside and out.
Inside and out. And it still cannot compete on software. Not even close. And when we talk about software now, we used to just talk about Android, right? Like Samsung's skin is ugly or its performance is bad. But now we're actually talking about like the machine access to the machine learning algorithms that are making photos better. The compensation for Handshake that Google is putting in its phones. The fact that Google can do portrait mode without a second lens, all of these things, it seems like just Samsung is just way behind. And somehow they kind of meet in the middle because some of the advantages offset the disadvantages. But it's very clear to me that the future, as Jerry keeps saying, is in software.
That was Evan Rogers, by the way.
Evan. Oh, I know Evan, up. And it's just like I get performance anxiety, and whenever I have to think of a name, I'm like, I can't think of this person's name right now. You know when that happens? You can sometimes stare at somebody in the face and not remember that person's name.
I go through that every morning when I'm talking to you.
What is my name? I have no idea right now.
I can't say it.
So, yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I don't know if that's enough to turn people away from Samsung. Obviously, the Note 8 is probably selling more than the Pixel will ever sell. But
so harsh. So look at the phones that were compared, and being right in the middle in this comparison means it's a pretty damn good camera.
Oh, it is. It's
even the one that came out at the bottom was still a good camera. It sounds so harsh when the way we're saying it, and I know you don't mean it that way. So I just want to say that out loud that we may have a lot of things we don't like about the Note 8, but we're not saying the camera sucks.
No, of course not. I'm definitely not saying it sucks. I mean, nobody could say it sucks. What I'm saying is that we have moved in a direction that puts even the Note 8's camera at a category that is lower than the top, the top tier.
Yeah, I just think about when like the Galaxy S7 came out, it was just unequivocally better than everything else before it, and in so many different ways, and especially the way that it completely absolutely destroyed everything else in low light quality and just random quick shots handheld in low light. And they're just not setting the bar anymore. They're just one of the pack. And I think that that's the change. It doesn't mean that it's bad. It's fallen off.
It was interesting. Samsung refined what we think of as typical good hardware for a mobile phone's camera. They refined that. And when, like you said, the Galaxy S7 was like the peak, it was, I think all of us were blown away. How good can this be from a phone? This is really great. Whereas we'll use the Pixel 2 as an example, built on what HTC tried to do with that horrible camera in the HTC One M7, with the big pixels, smaller resolution, suck in more light, and let's see what we can do with software once we have all that data collected through the sensor. And Google has been playing with that behind the scenes, and they've thrown that out. And when you add their smarts, where it knows what the picture is supposed to look like and does what it can do to make it look that way, and Qualcomm's hardware that can define and refine that data that's collected as well as it can in the ISP, we get something that blows us away just as much as the S7 did, but for a different reason, because the software is so great.
Well, and I mean, there are tons of things that the Note 8's camera can do that the others can't. So,
right.
That's also another factor. And then most people aren't buying a phone just for its camera. The Note 8 has the S Pen, has a whole bunch of other cool features. So once it gets updated to Oreo, I think we'll revisit the Note 8 and the S8 and S8 Plus, because as we'll talk about in a minute, there are way more reasons to love those phones. So moving on to the next topic, this week's kind of been a big one for Amazon. Amazon released its Echo devices and Alexa in Canada. I've been using an Echo Plus in my home for the last few days, and it's been pretty good. But I think the biggest story this week is the release of the Echo Spot. This was a kind of a bedside alarm clock Echo Show that was announced alongside the company's other devices, but it's taken a while to come to market.
It's a lot cuter and rounder than the Show.
Yeah, and I find that adjective quite troubling, the idea that it's cute and adorable. I hear a lot of people calling this adorable.
Ooh, I don't know about adorable, but...
Isn't it called anamorphism?
It's
when you
anthropomorphism.
Yeah, it is, but it's just like... Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute, but this is basically like the fundamental idea of this is that it's an alarm clock, but it's also everything else that Alexa can do. And I think that's really compelling. I mean, Phil's not here, and Phil was the one who has it and reviewed it, but that is, I think, really what the takeaway is that it takes everything that the Show did mediocre and improves it.
And I mean, we're just taking this away from what Phil has said anecdotally and in his review, but he's basically saying that I didn't really care for the Echo Show that much because it's kind of big and imposing and not all that good looking. This does 95% of what the Show does, and the only real downside is that you won't actually use it for, you know, watching video. It's got a relatively small circular screen. But the whole idea of the Show didn't really pan out anyway, because you don't really want to watch much video on the Show either, considering its angle and where you typically have it. It just wasn't really set up for that anyway. So this kind of seems like a much more, I guess, more applicable to more people's lives than the Show was.
Inside baseball here for a minute. I'm looking at my messages between Phil and I. And he flat out says, "Am I crazy for liking this thing so damn much?" So he's not just blowing smoke. He really likes the thing. And I know Phil, and he likes to hate stuff. So if he likes it, that makes me look at it twice.
Yeah, but he also loved the Show when it came out. And, it's one of those things where a lot of the potential has been unmet. And Amazon all of its, I find the conversation around home assistants and home speakers very interesting, because on the one hand, Amazon has far more physical speakers and Alexa conduits in people's homes, especially in the US, than any other company. But on the other hand, Alexa itself is kind of crappy. It doesn't really do a whole lot. And sometimes the experience is pretty horrible. And I found that out firsthand this week when I tried to set up my Echoes in my house and trying to get the skills to work. And that experience is just very clunky. And
well, so even beyond those more advanced skills, just the basics of it can sometimes fall apart. And that's kind of the problem.
I feel like they don't really understand UX yet. They don't really understand how people want to interact with their products. The fact that you have to be precise when you ask a command, there's really no deviation. That is troubling, especially given that Google is so good at interpreting what you want to say.
I think it's more of a back-end issue where Amazon just doesn't have that giant pool of data where they can get away with being a little ambiguous when they accept responses. They need you to be exact and very specific in all ways, because that's all they can do right now.
Yeah.
Oh, look, absolutely.
The early days of Google Now.
Well, then, and that's why they've released countless Alexa conduits, yep, because they're trying to find a niche for every product so that you learn right how to communicate with this particular product in a particular way, rather than just having something like the assistant, which is basically, I mean, with a few exceptions, the same experience everywhere, whether it's on your phone and to some extent. I mean, it used to be much different on your home than it would be on your phone, but now they're mm-hmm bridging that gap and they're bringing most of the experiences to both.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing. Whereas the consistency across devices, as Amazon, I mean, just by design, these things can't provide the exact same experience. You have some with screens, some without, some that can control smart home things directly, others that can't. And you have this this different setup where you can't just say, oh, I have an Echo, and so it does all the same things as all the other Echoes. And I think that that's kind of it's muddying the waters for Amazon a bit. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to drag this out because we have a lot to get to, but now, especially when we're putting a camera beside our bed, is a really good time for everybody to think long and hard about their private data and how they're sharing it and the companies they're sharing it with and what they're doing with it. That's all I want to say, because if I came up with the idea, hey, let me put a camera beside your bed that's connected to the internet, you'd think that I was insane.
And a microphone. Don't forget the microphone part too.
Right. I mean, the movies I'm going to make are going to have sound. You know, we're okay with Amazon doing it. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be okay with it. I'm saying we all need to think about why we're okay mm-hmm with it.
Agreed. I mean, that's why I come back to why I find it so frustrating that people are calling this adorable, because it is anthropomorphizing essentially a listening device, you know, a listening device that you clearly are giving permission to, and in exchange right is providing you with an inordinate number of really cool services, but it's a listening device.
There have been no indications that it's doing anything wrong.
Of course not. No.
I don't want to.
Nobody is accusing
like,
anybody. Yeah. I'm not accusing Amazon. I'm not accusing Google. And of course, people are going to say, well, if you're criticizing Amazon, you should be criticizing Google. And absolutely. I mean, what happened to the Google Home Mini was awful. It was a travesty that Google allowed this to happen, where the speaker was always listening because of a hardware problem.
That was tough. There was no way they were going to catch it, but they were still responsible for catching that. So you have to point the finger right at them. I agree completely. But, you know, and I'm not saying there's not a glitch with somebody's Echo out there that's listening when it shouldn't, but that's a glitch. So far, these companies are doing what they're supposed mm-hmm to do, but something we still need to think about.
100%. So let's talk a little bit about the other kind of smart home speaker that launched this week or last week, was the Google Home Max. So this is the $399 larger, much better sounding smart speaker that Google announced at the same event as the Google Home Mini back in October. It took, like the Spot, a bunch of time to get to market. It's still kind of not available, right, Andrew? Like, it's only available through a few retailers.
Like through Verizon? Which is Verizon and Best Buy, I think, are your best shots right now.
I was going to find one, and, you know, we need to talk about how well it works after Phil's review.
Well, he put it up last week, and it's...
Yeah, I know, but there's still, I mean, we need to talk a little bit about how it sounds from our point of view, and I was going to find one and try to do it. I can't find one. So that's why I haven't even said, hey, I'm going to buy one of these for you to tell me no, because I can't even find one to buy.
So a couple things about this. It does a feature called Smart Sound, where it uses its microphones to figure out the size and shape of your room and adjust the sound output accordingly. This is something that Sonos does manually. You have to point your phone's microphone at a room, and it kind of does it on behalf of your Sonos. This does it with hardware built into the speaker.
And so the idea there is that it's active. So if you were to pick it up and move it somewhere else, it would adapt automatically, right? Rather than having to train it.
Yeah. I know, like, if you've got a high-end Yamaha or Denon AV receiver, probably other brands too that I don't know, it does the same thing, but you have to push a button and tell it to do it if you've moved it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this is that it's a mono speaker, but it tries to create stereo separation using separate tweeters.
Yeah.
You can buy two of them at the exorbitant cost of $800 and create an actual stereo system. But as Phil says in his video, you can't really use this as a kind of a replacement for your home theater.
Right. Or you could buy two Chromecast audios, a Wi-Fi router, and two sets of speakers for $300 and have something that sounds better.
Right.
So don't do that. Don't buy two of them, guys.
It's not, and it's also just not if you want something for a home theater and you want a simple solution, there are great sound bars you can buy for roughly the same price that are tuned. You know, they are made for that specific kind of distance and room type and hooking up to a TV.
Believe they even come with Google Assistant from LG and from Vizio. So there's your answer. Andrew nails it. If you want a home theater system, that's what you should buy.
And a lot of them, even if they don't have Assistant, they have Google Cast built in too. So this is really the Google Home Max is really the for people that would buy a standalone thing. So like the original big one is the Bose Sound Link or Sound Wave or whatever, you know, your typical, like, you know, old people in the kitchen have this thing with an iPod dock on it that they could put an iPod into, right? That was the thing. And like the late 90s, early 2000s, like you upgrade and you got a fancy Bose speaker, or nowadays you get a Sonos Play 5 or something like that. This is a one-off speaker thing. This is not for the hi-fi crazy people that have tons of big speakers and know they can get better sound and get a fancier setup. But this is for people that have a bit more disposable income and don't think that one Google Home at $130, like, they can afford the $130, no problem. They want something that sounds better and they have a little bit more counter space to be able to put this in the kitchen or the living room or something like that.
I would like to get one for my deck. I could keep it in the deck box, and when I'm out there at the barbecue grill or we're at the pool or something, all I have to do is take it out and set it on the counter. And it's, you know, if it sounds as good as the people who have it say, that's a great solution for a situation like that.
And so think about it this way as well. So this is $399, and they are in stock at Best Buy. They're just delivering like mid to late January at this point. So, you know, they're probably under-promising, going to over-deliver on that.
But still. Yeah, I hope so.
But think about it this way. As we were going through our gift guide observations, like looking at all these different speakers and things, you know, Bluetooth speakers are absolutely huge. People love Bluetooth speakers, and they're willing to spend $150, $200 on these really nice JBL Bluetooth speakers. And because they take them out, like Jerry said, they take them onto the deck, or you're going to the pool, or you're whatever, you're camping, or you're at a park or something, you bring these things along. But most of the time, they're at home, and people are just pairing their phones to them for a party or whatever. This isn't that much more expensive. And it has the addition of definitely better sound than your $150 Bluetooth speaker. And it has Google Cast, Google Assistant, those kind of things. So I don't think the price is too exorbitant here.
I want one. I don't know why I do, but I want one. I know that I use my Play 5, my Sonos Play 5, more than any other speaker in my house. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that it just works. And it sounds great for everything. And here's the other thing too, right? A Google Home, an Echo, when you put a song on quietly, right? If I have something playing in the background, it sounds like crap. There's no dynamic range. There's no bass. You lose a lot of the definition. when I have a Play 5 or I'm sure a Google Home Max, if you put something on quietly, you're getting the entire sound of the song. You're getting it quietly, but you're still hearing the entire range. And that's because the actual like cavity of the speaker is bigger, so it can reproduce it. And that is, I think, the biggest difference, is that we've become so used to hearing half of the intended sounds in a song. We're hearing the mid-range and kind of the upper mid and the lower, like kind of the lower mid, but we're missing out on so much else within that. And I think that's important. I mean, if you really love music, then this is great. If you just use your Google Home to listen to podcasts and repeats of Android Central podcasts, then you don't need it.
Which you should totally do.
Over and over and over again. Why not? Yeah. All right. So last thing in the follow-up slash news of the week. So Eric Schmidt, longtime chairman of of Alphabet, one-time CEO, he is no longer executive chairman of Alphabet. Andrew, tell us exactly what Mr. Schmidt is doing for Alphabet now.
So at first, everybody freaked out because they thought that Schmidt was leaving Alphabet altogether. But it turns out that he's not. He's barely stepping down. So he's no longer the executive chairman of the board, which means he really kind of ran the show. He's now just going to be a board member. So he's still on the board, which is a very exclusive place to be still, the board of a multi-billion dollar company. And he's going to be a technical advisor, which is kind of like when Bill Gates, you know, quote unquote, left Microsoft. Obviously, he's still a technical advisor at Microsoft. And this happens a lot. They're basically saying, okay, we don't think that we need Eric Schmidt to make lots of, like, be the person to make lots of decisions, you know, rule on decisions from the board and all that. But we still think that he's very valuable to the company. And Larry and Sergey and Sundar, they think that he can still add something. So he's still going to be around for his kind of wisdom of how he ran Google and Alphabet for so long. But this kind of lets him fade away gracefully, so that in another year or two, who knows, he can leave entirely.
Wow, you and I have very different takes on Eric Schmidt's role at Google. The executive chairman was retirement phase one. Technical advisor is retirement phase two. He doesn't want to work. They don't need him. They want to keep him around just in case, but they don't want him to actually touch stuff.
Oh, I think we agree on that.
You just said it very eloquently and made it sound like... I'm like, no, they don't want to look at Eric Schmidt every day. They're like, stay out of this office. If we need you, we'll call you. Here's your new title. Here's a gold watch. Thanks.
I think that if he could still provide insight from time to time and not be an employee, or, you know, he would. But, you know, this is very much like a one step beyond an honorary title.
They have to keep him around because he was there from the beginning and things are set up in a way where he has the right answer sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's definitely the elder statesman, right? He's
been there for 17 years.
He knows how to, he knows every part of the company. And I'd guess that recently he's been far less involved in Google than he has been in the other bets. And
that's,
you know, this is something that I think Sergey and Larry have been spending far more time focusing on. And those are currently, like, we've heard that Nest is going to be subsumed into Google's hardware division. They're cutting down on the losses that are coming out of the X division. There's considerably less, I would say, spendthriftiness coming out of Alphabet.
Yeah.
And my guess is that Schmidt feels it's the right time to step back and say, okay, let's go spend my billions of dollars on, you know, philanthropy. Why not?
So this pretty much tells you everything you need to know in one sentence from Eric Schmidt He says, in recent years, I've been spending a lot of my time on science and technology issues and philanthropy, and I plan to expand that work.
Great.
He's done. That's totally cool.
We really only mention his name anymore when he does something stupid or says something stupid, and that's not fair because he is one of those rare people who can bridge finance and technology and make it interesting. And I like to hear some of the other things he has to say that doesn't make it into the tech news. So I hope we get to hear more of those.
Do you think that this is him preparing to run for, say, Congress or the Senate or another elected position?
That'd be the last thing we need.
No, I think he's way more interested in doing things that actually form policy, which is, you know, influencing people that are already in the government. I mean, he knows how to do that.
Yep, he's a manipulator behind the scenes. Hmm. He's very good at that.
He understands that he has more power as he is now than taking up some kind of a government position.
All right. Well, so long, Eric Schmidt. It's been interesting. We will, I'm sure, hear from him from time to time, but probably not nearly as often as we have.
Without his, you know, money smarts, we wouldn't have Android the way we have it today. Huh. Never forget that.
Yeah. Did he decide to hire Andy Rubin?
I don't know anything about that, but I have heard, you know, you hear things about times he's put his foot down and said no, or put his foot down and said yes, and they turned out to be things that were really good for the entire, you know, back then it was Google Corporation, and it was, you know, he just thought the right way. And, you know, you have to give him credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe he made more mistakes that we don't know about, but the man did a good thing.
Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we're going to thank our sponsor, Thrifter, who, as always, provides us with the best deals of the week and of this particular season. Now, the craziness of Black Friday is behind us, but that does not mean you can't find good deals. Ooh. Certainly people are buying gifts. Even today, I'm sure people are buying gifts in a scramble to get them before Christmas Day.
I have more shopping to do after we get off this podcast.
Well, let's hurry it up then.
I'm one of those people.
So as we do every week, we're going to go around and talk about a particular deal on Thrifter that we like. I'm going to kind of let somebody else start because I haven't picked mine yet.
I've got one.
Andrew, feel free to fill us in.
Because I used this yesterday. They pointed out that Google Play gift cards are on sale from Amazon and Walmart, 10% off. So you may think that you don't buy all that many apps, so you don't really need Google Play credit. But reminder that Google Play credit can be used for any app that uses Google Play's in-app billing, or your Google Play Music subscription, or your YouTube Red subscription, which is what I use it for, because you can just set up your recurring payments to just pull out of your Google Play balance. So why not buy a $50 Google Play card for $45 and just fill up your account a little bit so you have, you know, that's whatever, I stink at math, you know, 5 months of Google Play Music or YouTube Red. It's free money.
I do enjoy free money. Well, that's cool.
Can I pick two?
Yeah, go for it. That means I don't have to pick one.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you want to. they found a deal on the Amplify HD mesh Wi-Fi system, and it's $250, and you know, the list price is $312, which means you can probably find it for $280. You know how that works. But if you can save some money, and $250 for this is pretty good. It's a great mesh system. One of the first ones out there. I wouldn't recommend it if you have little kids because of the way the satellites work. But it does one thing better than all the others, and that's range. That sucker will cover, I can stay on Wi-Fi the whole way out to the end of the street and at the mailbox, you know, easily 300-400% further than any of the other mesh systems I've tested. So if you have a great big house and you'd need to buy maybe more than three Arrows or any other system, the Amplify HD will probably work for you, and you're going to save a hell of a lot of money. So you ought to check that out. And my second one is the Steam Link for $5. Man, if you play games and you have a Windows PC that you play games on, it's $5. Go buy it right now.
All right. Excellent. That's very cool. Okay, so I do have one. I have a couple, actually, but I'm gonna focus just on this one. So I am a very big fan of the Nintendo Switch. And there are a couple of really like nicely priced Switch accessories, because Nintendo has been very smart about not discounting the actual hardware. But one thing about the Switch is that it kind of needs accessories to be a great experience, especially if you have a lot of controllers or a lot of, there's like a lot of parts to it. So there's a charging dock for your Joy-Cons. It can charge up to two sets of your Joy-Cons for $18, which is really, really good. I'm hesitant because you don't really need it. But if you do have like a pro controller that you use on a regular basis and a bunch of Joy-Cons, you're probably going to want to pick this up, especially because it's so cheap. And the other one is that there's also a pro controller Joy-Con combo dock, which is $20. So if you have a single pro controller and a couple of sets of Joy-Cons, then you can also charge both of them up at the same time while the main set of Joy-Cons is on your Switch. That's the one that I went with because I don't need more than two sets of Joy-Cons, but there you go. So that's kind of my recommendation for the week. I'm not really expecting Switch hardware to go down in price. It's still $299. It's still kind of difficult to find.
I know, it's killing me.
But there you go.
Even find it used, they're getting $275 for it around here.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go with a used Switch.
Especially if you're not getting much of a discount. Yeah.
I would keep that warranty.
So I just saying it's hard to come across. You know, you're going to pay retail when you find it in the yeah. store or
no,
online.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. So that is my recommendation. And as always, if you're interested in learning more, go to thrifter.com and sign up for their daily newsletter. And we thank them for their sponsorship. All right, so we're going to rush through our last few minutes of the show, and we're going to kind of go through our recommendations for our favorite products of the year. So first of all, let's just start from the top. Jerry, what is your favorite phone of 2017?
The BlackBerry Key One, but it's not the phone I would call the best phone.
That's fine. That's totally cool. So why is the Key One your favorite phone of the year?
The keyboard. Call me a caveman. A lot of people have. I would rather have a great keyboard on a great phone and would give up a little bit of the phone greatness if the keyboard was good enough. And that's exactly what I'm doing with the Key One. The Pixel 2 just runs circles around it when it comes to the software and other features. But the Key One, I can actually, well, you all seen the way I type, especially on a phone. The Key One, I can actually write a long email or a blog post, and I have done it. And I don't often need to work from my phone, but anytime I need to type anything, I love that keyboard. I'm a BlackBerry fan. This is very far removed from the BlackBerry of old that I really like, but it's still just, it fits me. I love it.
It's perfect. Beautiful. I don't love the Key One. I think it's fine. I love that other people do. Like Mr. Mobile, he also loves the Key One. And my mom, who I bought a Key One for a few weeks ago, she switched from a BlackBerry Q10. She was a longtime Q10 user.
Oh.
And
she probably
loves the Key One.
Feels right at home and loves it.
Yeah, the keyboard's bigger. It's just as comfortable. And now she finally has Instagram, which she's been wanting for so many years.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool, Daniel's mom. If you listen to this, that's awesome.
I'll let her know that this part of the show shouts her out because she won't listen to the whole thing. Andrew, what is your favorite phone of 2017?
Google Pixel 2, not even close.
And you're talking about this Pixel 2 or the 2 XL or both?
The baby one that I can fit my hand around.
Okay.
Small Pixel is best Pixel.
Yep.
And why is that?
Well, I can fit my hand around it. I can use the dang thing, and the screen is pretty good. The speakers sound great. The hardware is solid enough. The only problem I have with it is no headphone jack. That's actually my only complaint with it.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm giving Dongle up life. On that. Because the software amplifier in it is so crappy anyway. A headphone jack wouldn't sound that much better than Bluetooth, so I don't even care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I use my Bose headphones or, you know, Pixel Buds 99% of the time. I have my USB-C dongle is plugged in my car because that's the only place I typically plug in. But it's just that the annoyance factor of the times when I do want to, you know, I'm in a friend's car and I want to plug in, or I'm plugging into their stereo system over at their house or whatever, and I just can't do it. And I'm not going to be the guy that walks around with the USB-C dongle in his pocket along with his keys and wallet. That's just the annoying part.
A USB-C to 3.5 audio jack key ring fob. I'm building one.
Are you sure some third-party reseller on Amazon hasn't already, like, 100 up
I
to
mean,
you?
Well, I'll build one anyway and just use a Chinese company to supply it for me because they can find ways to sell anything.
I mean, I can already do it. It's, you know, it's easy to put a little loop on there, but, you know, I've got a new car key that's already too big and a new apartment key fob that's too big. It's like my keys are already bad enough even without putting dongles
on there. That's true. I feel your pain on that one. The more keys, like we thought that going electronic would get rid of keys because we'd be able to do everything on our phone. But instead, we've just replaced keys with fobs, which have electronic pieces in them, which make them big because they have batteries. Yeah. It's kind of a catch-22.
And buttons and RF, yeah.
My Jeep is that odd year that it's a key and a fob, and it's huge. It's as big as a freaking flashlight.
What year?
2003.
Whoa.
And I'm never getting a new one because it's a solid front end, and if you're a car guy, you know what I mean.
They had fobs back in 2003?
Well, no, it's a key with a huge plastic head on it that has electronics and a button built in.
So it has a physical key, but... Yeah, like because the new cars, they don't even have physical keys,
right.
But the fob is stupid huge.
I've rebuilt the engine in it twice because I'm not buying a new one with that crappy front transaxle.
Yes, correct.
Favorite key fob of 2017. Go.
So I'm going to go with Andrew here and also say that the Pixel 2, the baby Pixel, is my favorite phone of the year.
Yes.
And I love it for many of the same reasons, but I dislike it for a different reason. It is not so much the lack of a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. It's more the lack of wireless charging, which I know sounds strange, but after using an S8 and an iPhone X and a V30 and a G6 and everything that had wireless charging in it, my house is set up for it now. I've got a wireless charger in every single room. I miss it. I miss it a lot more than I thought I would. So that would be the one thing that I would love to see next year. But I get why it's not there. The metal back is just so nice to use, and I don't need a case with it.
For $900, they could have afforded to use the coil that would go through metal.
Yeah, it's $650.
I went through what you went through with the 6P when it came around, because the previous Nexuses since the 4 had wireless charging, and I have charging docks built into my desk, built into the end table. I have one on my nightstand. I have one for the car. I have them everywhere. It was wonderful, and I hated it, and it just really, and it's now I hate it all over again because of you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I like to hate things.
Okay, so speaking of liking to hate things, Jerry, your biggest disappointment
oh
of 2017.
Ooh, the Pixel 2 XL.
Ooh.
Whoa.
And I'm sorry. I know,
hot take.
I know they all don't have the same screen, but the one that I had access to, and it wasn't mine, to be fair, it was a gentleman I know who tests phones for a different industry. The screen on it was just utter crap that should have never been sold. And I don't care who you blame. I don't care if you say it was LG. I don't care if you say it was Google. It was garbage. And if that's representative of any percentage of the Pixel 2 XLs that are on the market, Google should be ashamed and should have never sold that product.
Okay. Well, I get that for sure. I disagree. I think there are many more disappointments this year, which I will talk about in a moment. But Andrew, what is your biggest disappointment of 2017?
Moto Z2 Force, because Motorola made a huge deal out of the thing and once again got a lot of stuff right, but then tried to charge like $750 for a phone, which its screen just deteriorated before your eyes as soon as you took it out of the box.
Yeah. So,
like, physically.
Funny story, I woke up this morning and updated my Z2 Force to Oreo because Verizon, for some reason, was the first.
Oh, no kidding.
So I'm actually going to use it for the weekend because I just got the new Polaroid Moto Mod, the one that spits out Z Ink paper.
Ooh.
So I'm taking it up north to, I'm going to see some friends for the weekend, and I'm going to just use it to print photos, and it'll be fun. But that is like the only redeeming quality. I will 100% agree.
Northern Canada in December, you could just use white paper and say that that's a picture.
It's snowing right now. We got about half a foot of snow yesterday, and we're going up to an area that had about a foot and a half. So looking forward to driving on those roads. All right. So my favorite, or my biggest disappointment this year, and I'm going to get so much hate for this, is the LG V30. And I will tell you why. The LG V30 could be my ideal phone. And when I saw it in New York, Andrew, you were there, it was a fantastic experience. Everything about it seemed too good to be true. Amazing headphone amplifier, DAC, wireless charging, fastest specs, everything.
Just like way better than the G6.
Decent software, even though it was running Nougat. And you get it home and you start using it, and the camera and the video are just bad. They regress compared to the G6. And I hate using this camera because I know that I won't get the photos that I deserve. So that's what it comes down to. It just disappoints me.
Valid, because the V series is supposed to excel in those exact areas.
Yeah. It's so disappointing, Jerry. I was so upset when I started taking this out in low light and realized that it can't take a good photo in anything less than perfect light. And it's so frustrating because it...
And in many ways, like, not as good as the G6 that got lots of price cuts and it's like $200 cheaper.
And you're not the only person I've heard that from. So that's a common thing, maybe more common than my Pixel 2 XL experience.
All right. So, Jerry, this is going to be our last category. Biggest surprise of 2017. What is the thing? It doesn't have to be a phone. It can be a story. It can be something that was like, holy crap, this is really cool. What was the biggest surprise that you had in the year?
I think it was Essential as a company.
Interesting.
Seeing Andy Rubin rear his head in the Android world again was just completely unexpected. You didn't even hear rumors about it. He just showed up one day with a briefcase full of phones that may not be great phones, but he's like, hey, I'm back. And that was awesome and unexpected.
Huh. That's a really good one. I mean, Andrew, yeah, you've given the company a lot of crap for the software issues on the Essential phone, but I don't think it's going
currently
anywhere.
Using one.
I think that it's just a conduit to a broader ecosystem that they want to try to sell. I think the Essential phone is a remote control for the other products that are in Andy Rubin's head. Mm.
I think lots of really good ideas there, but yeah, it's been a hard lesson in how difficult it is to make a really high-end phone and compete in 2017 flagship phone space that has gotten super, super competitive, and everybody is really good at it, and everybody has spent 5 to 10 years getting really good at it, and it's really hard to get there. And I agree. I don't think it's going anywhere either. They've had lots of time to try to fix one product, and they still haven't done it. We'll talk about that on another podcast, but it's just not there.
Andrew, what is your biggest surprise of 2017?
I actually think my biggest surprise, at least at the time, thinking back at it, is Google's massive investment in HTC and buying a ton of engineers and developers from HTC for whatever it was, $4 billion.
That's a good one, too.
That is just a massive story that is just going to fade into the background because it's not super flashy after the initial news of how much money changed hands, but will, you know, undeniably be a huge part of how, you know, every piece of Google hardware comes out in the next 5 years.
And surprising, because we all heard rumors and expected that Google was just going to buy them outright.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen with that? You know, is it just going to be that with the Pixel 3, we'll see the phones like made by other companies, but the DNA will be all Google?
It's really hard to know. I mean, again, it's such a background like play where if they didn't have to make a financial disclosure about it, Google wouldn't necessarily even want to make some announcement. You know, they acquire new engineers all the time. They come from other well-known companies. They just don't always come over in bulk with such a vote of confidence and a huge amount of money going to another company. I think the question is, you know, how do you actually quantify, you know, what part of this was from these people that came from HTC versus what Google was already doing? I don't know how you could actually know for sure.
The rumors I've heard, Daniel, and you know, rumors, is that the Pixel 3 is still an HTC contract phone, at least one Pixel 3. And from, you know, that's part of the reason why the people that Google picked up still work with HTC, because they have agreements that HTC needs to fulfill throughout the next several years. But from the Pixel 4 onwards, it's going to be a Foxconn-like company making phones for Google.
That could make sense, right? That's how the iPhone has the margins that it has, you know, because HTC, with HTC, like with the Pixel, you were getting both HTC's manufacturing, but you were also spending millions and likely billions of dollars on their design teams, their consultancies, everything else that comes with it. Whereas an ODM is basically just, okay, here, thank you. I'll take that design and build it for you.
And the people that Google was spending millions or billions of dollars to have them bring ideas into a real product now work for Google.
No, it's a big deal. So my biggest surprise, and there are a few of them that I really struggled to decide between. But I think my biggest surprise of the year has got to be the sort of evolution of Chrome and culminating in the Chrome, in the Pixelbook. And when I say that, it's not the Pixelbook as a piece of hardware that's so impressive, which it is. It's that you're seeing this very slow but constant maturity of Chrome and how it makes sense. In a year from now or 2 years from now, it's going to be the heart and soul of this, of I think Google's, you know, mobile play may not be stretching it, but at least it will be more integral to Google's future, I think, than we realize. I'm not saying it's going to supplant Android, but given that Android and Chrome now live in harmony, and most of the bugs have been worked out, I love the Chrome experience. I think it is one of the most powerful and compelling mobile experiences out there. And after going to Qualcomm Snapdragon Summit and seeing how much work Qualcomm is putting in to making this always connected PC a reality with Microsoft, I have no doubt that we will see something similar on the Chrome side. And yeah, I'm really excited about that.
I almost picked the Pixelbook, but I knew it was coming. I'd seen one before. I'd seen one over the summer. So I couldn't call it a surprise on the same level as Andy Rubin.
Yeah.
I mean, the individual releases of Chrome OS aren't super flashy like they are with Android. But man, the constant march of new stuff is quite amazing. Anybody that thinks that Google is not putting massive amounts of resources into it just isn't paying attention.
You know, I'll go a step further than Daniel. Chrome is the future of Google's software ad delivery service. Chrome is going to be what's on your phone and your laptop and in your car and on your kitchen counter within the next 10 years.
I mean, a lot of people think that Android is just going to disappear and be replaced by Chrome, or that Chrome will be replaced by Android. Neither of those things will happen.
No. It's going to get to the point where people like to say they're going to merge. They're going to be interchangeable, and you're not even going to know what you're running until it's too late, and you're already running the Chrome engine with a familiar Android user interface on top of it.
And like bonus surprise, because I'm hosting and I can say this, Google Assistant. I think Google Assistant has come a long way this year, and it's a lot better. So,
yeah.
Ha, vindication. I said it would get better.
I don't think.
And a lot of people gave me a bunch of hate for it.
Well, anybody who gave you hate for it didn't understand Google. This is not a company that just, you know, it's very clear what the company is experimenting with and what it's actually like all in on. And Tango, which has now been deprecated and shut down in favor of AR Core, that was an experiment, right?
That was Google does engineering in the public and lets us play with it. That's a great example. Tango was any other company would have done that as a test, and you know, hardware partners would have been the people that were testing it and, you know, used it over the weekends. But instead, they let Asus and Motorola build a phone we could actually buy so they could figure it out and give us AR Core.
Right. It's unclear whether that was the goal from the beginning because Tango relies on specialized hardware, but it certainly informed what happened. And it's kind of like what happened with Google Glass. We wouldn't have the computational photography smarts of the Pixel 2 if it wasn't for the epic failure of Google Glass.
You know, Google Glass isn't dead.
Or the design of the Pixel Buds, apparently.
Google Glass is not dead. There are still plans for a enterprise thing, especially geared towards the medical profession with Google Glass.
Well, let's hope it fares
better.
Do
you want your doctor to rely on Google Glass? I don't.
I wouldn't mind. I think if it made it more likely that the diagnosis would be more accurate, or if the turnover would be faster, then yeah, I would.
But that would mean it wasn't really Google Glass and it wasn't a hot garbage.
Well, I mean, like a Google Glass that isn't hot garbage. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you guys want to chat about before we end the last Android Central podcast of 2017?
Well, just remind everybody that we're going to have a complete list of all of our, you know, kind of best of 2017 going up very shortly as well. So maybe even by the time you listen to this.
Well, you just did that, so thank you.
Yeah.
Don't write off Android Wear. Expect everything else to get better. And if you haven't tried one, a Chromebook is a really good Christmas present. If you buy one that was made in 2017, you'll love the experience.
Actually, do write off Android Wear, please. Do write it off so that Google will get the
in its current iteration, it's garbage. Mm. Yeah, but Google hasn't written it off. And, man, look at the way they've turned around other products. I'm hoping they can do it with some sort of wearable.
All right. I think that's where we're going to leave it for 2017. If you've listened to every show throughout the year, or even if you've tuned in and only listened to a couple of them, we thank you so much for being a part of the AC Podcast experience. It's been a ton of fun hosting you this year, and I will say you guys make it really easy to do my job. Andrew, Jerry, you're amazing. Thank you for being here week after week. And we also want to shout out to Russell Hawley and Alex Doby and Florence Ion, who was here earlier in the year, and everybody else who has guested on the show. Daniel Matti, who was really, really cool. He came on and helped us understand what was going on with the Pixel 2 XL. And to all of you who listen every week and stick with our hemming and hawing and umming and, you know, less than professional language, we love you. So that's it. We will be back in 2017. Have a very safe and happy Merry Christmas. Have a safe and happy New Year. And if you're celebrating something else, have a safe and happy that as well. Goodbye. And you're awesome.
Thanks for all the fish.
Bye, everybody.